Good morning, everyone. I'm Angela Denning, and I'm here for the Fluoride Show. A little background on why we're having a show on fluoride at this time is about the municipal election, which is scheduled for October 3rd. There are 7 ballot propositions that local voters will be deciding on, and one of them is on fluoride. Fluoride is currently added to the water supply by the borough. That was approved by votes in the past. And we have some guests in the studio who would like to see that changed. We also have guests here who believe fluoride in the water is beneficial. So I'd like to start with some introductions. You can't see us here in the studio, but there are a lot of us. There's actually 6 people in the studio at this time. I have 5 guests, and we're going to do some mic checks and make sure everybody can be heard. I have 2 residents here, Dana Tines and Don Koenig, and they would like to see fluoride taken out of the water. Can you say hello into the mic?
Good morning. This is Dana.
Good morning. This is Don Koenig.
Okay, great. Thank you. And then I have 2 individuals here who would like to keep it as is, keep the fluoride in the water. That is Dr. Beardsley and Sandy Volk. Can you say hi into the microphone?
Good morning. This is Sandy Volk.
Good morning. Philip Beardsley.
Okay. And then I also have Carl Hagerman here. He is the Public Works Director with the borough. Hi, Carl.
Good morning, Angela.
And I want to ask you a little bit about the kind of the technical aspects of fluoride getting into the water supply in Petersburg. And I guess we could just start with that. Also remind people that this is going to be a call-in show for the next hour. It's going to be from 10 to about 11 o'clock. And please, you are welcome to call in with any questions or comments you might have regarding fluoride in Petersburg's water supply, whether you believe it's a good thing to have in there or you would like to see it removed or you're not sure, you're undecided, and you have some questions for the guests here in the studio. So to start us off with, I'd just like to get a little bit of background about fluoride being in Petersburg's water supply. So I'm going to turn to you, Carl, and ask you, because as the Public Works Director, you have those details. What does that entail? Does Petersburg have fluoride naturally occurring in its water?
Well, the answer to that is yes. It's a very small amount, but we have done some background checking in our raw water sources, and the natural occurring level is at about 0.1 parts per million, so it's a very low level.
Okay, and then how much and how does the borough add fluoride?
Well, the EPA and the American Water Works Association both recommend an optimum dosage of fluoride at 0.7 parts per million as a residual in the system. And our utility meets that level consistently, reliably, year after year.
Okay, so what is the fluoride that's added? Is it like a liquid in a bottle or powder?
Sure, I'll talk about that a little bit. There are a couple different ways to add fluoride to a water system. The size of system that we have is more conducive to what we use, which is an upflow saturator system using sodium fluoride in a crystalline form. How that works is that we have a small 300-gallon tank that we put the chemical into. We dump bags of sodium fluoride into the tank, and then the water to dissolve the chemical actually flows up through those crystals that are in the bottom of the tank. And sodium fluoride has a property where it will only dissolve to a certain point as it's put in water. So with the system set up the way that it is, a maximum of 4% solution is created, and it's very consistent because it's impossible for sodium fluoride to dissolve any more than that. So we draw from a very consistent percent solution, and that solution is then injected into the water that's leaving the plant. And this is the water that's already been flocculated, clarified, filtered, and so the fluoride is added to that water as it heads towards the storage tank.
Okay, so the finished water before it heads out to residents' homes, you know the amount of fluoride that's in it.
Yes. And our system is it's a very safe and reliable. We do a lot of monitoring. We do a lot of testing Our SCADA system, which is a computer-controlled system that operates the plant, there are a couple safeguards in that system where we have an electronic fluoride analyzer at our storage tank that every 4 minutes or so it takes a reading of the fluoride in our system. And if there's an anomaly in that fluoride level, it will alert the operators of the plant both during the day and during the off hours, so the operators can respond and correct anything that's wrong. And if that alarm goes for a certain amount of time and it's not attended to, the plant will shut down automatically so that the system can't overdose as far as the fluoride residual is concerned.
Does that happen? Do those alarms go off?
No, actually, we don't. We don't see those alarms. They're there. They need to be there. They don't go off. The system, because of the way that we dissolve the sodium fluoride and it's injected into the water stream, as I said, it's very reliable and predictable, and it would be a major malfunction for there to be an overdose situation.
Okay. I want to ask a little, I want to get into the history and the years that we're talking about that Petersburg has been putting fluoride into the water and then not, but I also want to remind listeners who might just be joining us that they can participate in the conversation that we're having right now about fluoride in Petersburg's water supply. You can call us at 772-3808 with any questions or comments that you might have. So feel free to do that. How long has Petersburg been putting fluoride into the water supply?
Since 1986 is what I understand. I grew up in Petersburg and I graduated at Petersburg High School in 1985, so my entire youth was spent without fluoride. In 1986, the community, I believe Phil was part of the push to begin fluoridation of the water system. The community started fluoridating at that time, and it's been the same. It's been ongoing since that date. There's been at least one other public vote. That 1986 usage was as a result of a public vote on the subject. And then in 1998, I believe there was a reaffirmation of the community desire to fluoridate.
Okay. All right. So in 1986, Dr. Beardsley, you were a proponent of putting fluoride into the water supply for the first time in Petersburg, is that right?
That's correct. I had a dental hygienist, Pam Brantley. She and I were the main instigators of fluoridating the water supply.
Okay. Can you kind of tell me about that time frame of, you know, why you wanted to even start up that conversation and change things through a public vote?
A good question. What was my exposure to water fluoridation? I came to Petersburg from Bethel, and I was there 2.5 years. Before that, I was did a hospital internship in Anchorage.
So just for people who might not know, you're talking about Bethel, Alaska, which is far-flung western Alaska.
Yeah, it's the largest village town in southwestern Alaska. There, it's kind of I would describe it more as a hopeless situation as far as getting things done dentally, as far as correcting the problem, because there was 2 dentists and 6 physicians for Bethel and 52 villages. Sorry, you're not going to get the job done. And so we needed a better way of getting the decay rate down. And the best solution was to put in a fluoridation along with the same time. And a lot of these villages didn't even have water supplies when they were putting in the pipes and things for a regular water supply. Also for sanitation reasons, you know, for the water supply, you know, you gain a lot by being civilized, so to speak. Good sanitation and things like that. So it was the idea of trying to put in fluoridation units. And that was about the only way you were going to get to the problem that we had. If there's 2 dentists for that many people, probably, I would guess, somewhere around 18,000 people, you're not going to get the job done. You had to go to a community-based thing, and the only way, cost-effective way, what to do it was to fluoridate the water supply. Otherwise, you may as well hire about 200 dentists or something like that, and there's no way that they were going to pay for that.
So what I'm hearing is that where you lived before Petersburg and Bethel, there was a lot of tooth decay problems in villages, and you thought that fluoride in the water would help?
Oh, absolutely.
And then when did you move to Petersburg?
I moved to Petersburg in 1972.
Okay. So 1972, and then the vote didn't happen until 1986. So what, you know, Petersburg is not like Bethel in terms of the economy and that kind of thing, even the culture. So what happened in Petersburg that made you want to think about that here?
Well, when I came from Bethel, things were so bad. I came to Petersburg. Things weren't as bad. And so that was, I wasn't really motivated to, you know, to do anything to start with. But I began to realize with time that, holy cow, we're not gaining on this at all. When I first came to Petersburg, decay rates were absolutely atrocious. Any area that has high rainfall is going to have higher decay rates. There's less things in the water to help out. That's just standard. Western Washington, Western Oregon, same way.
The less things you mean by what? What do you mean by less things in the water?
Having like fluoride would be one thing, but other
minerals and things.
Other minerals and things too.
Okay.
I think a good water supply, public water supply, should have naturally occurring things in it. What's there naturally? I think you're better.
Okay.
And fluoride was a proven, effective way of fighting tooth decay. So it made sense to fluoridate this water supply.
So you were in Petersburg for about 14 years, and then you wanted to get it in the water?
Yes.
All right. And then, Sandy, how long have you been a hygienist in Petersburg?
I moved to Petersburg in 1990. I've been a dental hygienist for almost 40 years. I came from North Dakota, where fluoride occurs naturally in the water in the community that I grew up in. It was about one part per million. I lived in Western North Dakota prior to moving to Petersburg, and actually there were some areas that were too high. And when I moved to Petersburg, one of my first comments to Dr. Beardsley was, I've never seen so many people with fillings in their mouths. Because growing up, we did not have that in North Dakota. There is occurring fluoride naturally throughout the Midwest mountain areas, Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Texas. Some areas have too much fluoride. In eastern Montana, there are rural areas that ranchers and farmers drank from their well water. The fluoride content was up to 6 and 7 parts per million. They had fluorosis. We'd ask them to not use their drinking water on their children, and they said, oh, forget that. There's nothing. My teeth are great, even though they had some mild fluorosis.
Okay.
They had no cavities.
All right. We'll definitely get into the
fluorosis part later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is that you grew up, and where you were, the one part per million is about what
is ideal. That's
what
the
government
says. They actually most community water fluoridation programs that add fluoride to the water, it's about 0.7 to 1.2 is the average range, where the EPA allows up to 4 points. But I've never known of any community water going that high.
Okay. All right. And so 1990, you were here.
Arrived in Petersburg, huh?
Treating people for...
So I'm working with Dr. Beardsley first and then Dr. Lister since then.
In terms of getting the fluoride in the water, the vote was in 1986. Has anything changed in your opinion? I mean, you said you came to Petersburg in 1972, Dr. Beardsley, I'm looking at you. So 1972, and then fluoride came on the scene in 86. And then did you see anything in terms of dental care with the general public that you were seeing as a dentist?
Well, there was less tooth decay, that's for sure. When I first came here, I made dentures for a couple of kids who were either just out of high school or still in high school. You don't even begin to see tooth decay like we had then. There's still tooth decay. You're not going to stop all of it. it's a lot of times it's a hereditary thing. It's depths of roofs and fissures. It has to do with pits that occur naturally in enamel, especially on certain teeth. But if you fluoridate and you do that, the combination of a good program with sealants, we could virtually stop almost all tooth decay in this town.
So you saw a difference or an improvement, you think?
Big improvement.
In the amount of tooth decay?
There was less tooth decay.
Okay. All right. Well, to remind listeners, we have a variety of guests here in the studio. I want to also bring in people who think that fluoride is not the answer. And if you put fluoride in the water supply, that's not the answer. So Dana Tinas and Don Koenig, what are your thoughts? I know you're kind of outspoken on the fact that you don't want to see fluoride in Petersburg's water.
One thing that most people in America fail to realize is that cavity rates have come down all over the developed world, whether the countries are unfluoridated or not. So it isn't just in our country that cavity rates have come down. They've come down everywhere, and there are graphs that show that, and I brought one today if anybody's interested. I brought two today, actually. And the lowest rates of cavity in the world are in Denmark right now, where they follow a program that has no fluoride at all. It's called the Nexo program. It was started in the town of Nexo. And when a child is 8 months old, a healthcare worker comes into the home and instructs the parents in the proper care of teeth and brushing. And they make frequent visits up until the time the child is 18. They have a much lower rate of decay than in the United States, and they use no fluoride.
So what you're saying, or what I'm hearing, is that maybe there is a decrease in dental tooth decay, but it may not be because of fluoride in the water.
Right. One thing about natural fluoride is it's the 13th most abundant element on the earth. It doesn't occur by itself. It's usually accompanied by calcium or magnesium or strontium, and yet none of these things are ever given the benefit. Nobody thinks, oh, it's the calcium in the water. They think it's the fluoride in the water. And fluoride, one of the things about people can't understand why it's still so controversial after so many years, but it was never controversial until authorities made it controversial back before the 1940s. Everyone who knew anything at all about fluoride, like biochemists who used it to poison enzymes in their lab animals, industrialists and dentists who saw the dental fluorosis in different parts of the country, and the general public alike who used it for exterminating rats and other pests, they knew it was deadly. And the problem up until the late 1930s was how to get fluoride out of the water and not to put it in. But when the U.S. Public Health Service gave water fluoridation the thumbs up in 1950, even though there had been no health studies completed, it was not because any studies had shown fluoride to be safe for human consumption. It was because a great whitewashing had begun, a facelift for fluoride. And this would be seen as a win-win situation. Fluoride, a deadly toxin that was a waste product of industry and could not be safely dumped into the American waterways or legally dumped either, according to the EPA standards. And it was spread by air from the smokestacks of steel, fertilizer, aluminum, and other industrial plants and fell on fields and orchards, ranches, and cities. If this product could be captured and then disseminated into city water supplies, it would solve not only a waste problem, but it was thought it might help the tooth decay rates of America's children, because even though some of these communities that had terrible fluorosis, they had ugly brown spots, and even in Italy they had black teeth around the volcanic areas. Some dentists wrote that it seemed like their teeth were free, relatively, of cavities, although not always. Some dentists wrote that when the outer enamel sloughed off, it was impossible to make a good filling onto the tooth. But there was coordination between industry and government to put this item in the water. If you don't believe me, perhaps you will believe EPA Administrator for Water, Rebecca Hanmer, who in 1983 wrote that community water fluoridation was, quote, an ideal solution to a long-standing problem. By recovering byproduct fluosilicic acid from fertilizer manufacturing, water and air pollution are minimized, and water authorities have a low-cost source of fluoride available to them, unquote.
So it sounds like you don't exactly trust the government saying this is the right thing to do.
I'm not a big fan of trusting authorities. To me, it's a lot like trusting a religious body. You need to verify.
So you brought up
fluorosilicic acid or fluorosis?
Fluorosis. Also, so we're definitely needing to explain kind of what that is. First, I want to remind listeners that you can call in. This is a call-in show, 772-3808, if you'd like to join the conversation. Also here with me is somebody else who would like to see fluoride taken out of Petersburg's water, and that is Don Koenig. Tell me your story and with this whole thing. I know it's been a long time that you've wanted to have fluoride taken out of the water. Is that right?
That's correct. After looking at the issue of fluoridation, the issue really became a personal one in the fact that it's a violation of my rights to put something in the water and medicate me with something that I choose not to put in my own mouth by the vote of the public. And that's on the recommendation of doctors and dentists. So in 1998, I brought Dr. Kennedy, whose father and his grandfather were both dentists. And he came to the conclusion over time and reading some of his literature and others that fluoride was not only harmful and not helpful to the teeth, the health of the teeth, but also there were other issues related to that. And I brought Dr. Kennedy at great expense to the community, and the medical profession and dental profession chose not to engage Dr. Kennedy nor his counterpart in a discussion, public discussion on that at that time, which, you know, turned out the way it did. It was a vote, and public continued to support that. I would like to just back up a little bit on in addressing the comment that Carl Eggerman made. In 1998, I went to the water treatment plant, and I looked at what they were putting in the water at that time, and it was a sodium fluorosilicate compound. It was highly toxic, but it had other components within it. Since that time, I have visited the water treatment plant, and I totally compliment the Petersburg Borough and his water department for what they are using. They're using a quality pharmaceutical, what's called a pharmaceutical grade. It's not a toxic waste, and much of the studies and reporting that has been done in the literature that you read is talking about other sodium compounds that they put in the water with other side effects. About 80% of America uses the cheaper toxic industrial waste. Petersburg is not doing that. Petersburg has got a pharmaceutical grade. I went online. The water treatment plant operator provided me with a complete tour and understanding of what was going on. And I appreciate that. So the Petersburg, since 1998, has changed the product that they put in the water. It is a very toxic, it's still a toxic substance. It's still fluoride. And I still oppose it. And I oppose it for a variety of reasons. And primarily the reason is this whole discussion so far this morning and what you're going to hear about is about teeth and caries and dental. But I happen to be an individual that's personally affected by the fluoridation of the water because I have health issues. I have kidney issues. I have heart issues. I have experienced these since 1998. Now, that's a kind of an onset. There may be other people in the community that have issues with kidney dialysis or subsets of the population. I know about the medical facility in our community, how they get potable water. Today I brought with me a bottle of clear water, pure water. It has no particulate matter in it, no chlorine, no fluoride, Nothing. It goes through a reverse osmosis. Now, if I were to share that with everyone here, I don't think, honestly, in all honesty, they could tell the difference if I gave them a cup of fluoridated water and a water that's been treated by reverse osmosis. I don't think you could taste the difference.
Are you treating that at your house?
I make that at my home, at my own expense. I drink it every day because what's happened to me, I found that the magnesium and the fluoride bind together and affects my heart and the ability for my heart to function. I've had three ablations of my heart. I have a pacemaker in my heart. I also have kidney issues because I drink copious amounts of water. I cannot and will not drink fluoridated water. And I try not to use a toothpaste with fluoride. I avoid it. I know that there are natural components in our, in the element is there. It's like Dana had said, it's, you know, very common. But I need to figure out how to treat myself. So for me and for the public, well, all we're talking about is teeth. And I say, no. There's all kinds of other issues out there. And if you can go do your looking and finding out, the EPA, the ADA, ADA has never said and never approved. The Food and Drug Administration has never approved fluoride for a substance as a medication or any kind of thing. And that's what I object to in this community, is that we medicate our water to treat a problem of tooth decay. There are other alternatives, whether it's toothpaste, going to your dentist for a prescription, to have fluoride topically applied, which is the only effective way of treating people and tooth decay. And if I were to sit in Dr. Beardsley's chair today or in Sandy Volk's chair, and I was going to sit there and they were treating me for my teeth, and they said, they're going to ask me, would you not ask me a question if I wanted to have fluoride put on my teeth or have a filling, whether it's mercury or a composite or whatever? There's a dialogue between patient and caregiver. And what I see in the paper really brought it home. The other day on September 14th in the pilot, in the first page, it says, all is not clear. It was an article by a doctor regarding the article in the paper about the hospital and a lawsuit. But in that article, he says, physicians and medical staff had the duty to do no harm, none, nada, nothing in their care. A prime principle of caregiving and decision making. You cannot, not, there's no one in this room can convince me or tell me that they're not doing harm to me. There's too much unanswered questions. The city of Juneau spent a 2-year study and they voted by 60% to remove it from their water supply. It's inconclusive. There's not enough science and data. So the question is, and I'm asking the public to vote yes on this proposition and to take it out of our water and let science figure it out. And then on that other side, if a doctor or a dentist or a parent can make that decision, it should never be a public discussion and a vote on something like this.
All right. Well,
that's where I stand.
We're going to continue the conversation, but we do have a caller. So let's go ahead and take the caller and see what they have to say. Hi, good morning.
Good morning. This is Lizzie Thompson. And
hi, Lizzie.
I've been reading up about this, and I'm not completely convinced either way about fluoride. But I tend to agree with Dawn that there are enough concerns that it should be something that a person can decide on their own. And fluoride rinses for teeth are readily available at the grocery store. I have hypothyroidism, and I know that fluoride was used to treat hyperthyroidism because it suppresses the activity of various enzymes that interact with the thyroid. And so if you don't have hyperthyroidism, it stands to reason that fluoride could contribute to hypothyroidism. There have been lots of studies about it that you can look up. Anyhow, that's just what I'm thinking about when I try and weigh the issue is.
All right. Well, thanks for your comments, Lizzie.
Thank you.
So it, for those who might have had trouble hearing her, she was kind of echoing what Don was saying, which was she believes that there are other ways to get fluoride besides having it in the water, and she questions the risks of that. So, Sandy, you have something to say?
There are several ways to obtain fluoride, but they react differently on the teeth. Community water fluoride starts when a child is an infant. It is carried through the blood supply, and it hardens the enamel and the entire tooth while it's developing down in the jaw before it even erupts into the mouth. Then the topical fluorides can take over somewhat. The tooth is developed. Your mouth rinses, your toothpaste, your topical fluoride applications only act on the outer surface of the enamel, not through the thickness like water fluoridation or the vitamins could.
Okay, Dana?
Let's talk about hypothyroidism. It's true that back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, in Argentina, Germany, and France, doctors were giving fluoride tablets to people to lower their overactive thyroids, and they were prescribing baths, water baths with fluoride. And that's a route of exposure that our government has never explored. How much do you absorb through your skin? Well, the fact is that 2 to 5 milligrams of fluoride per liter is very effective at lowering the thyroid, its activity. And we have an epidemic of hypothyroidism in our country now. And there was recently a study that came out of the UK that compared, I'm thinking Manchester with another area, and it found an association. Twice as much hypothyroidism could be expected in the fluoridated areas as in the non-fluoridated areas in England. Thank you.
All right, I believe we have another caller that we're going to take here. Hi, thanks for joining us.
Hi, this is Erin Michael, and I'm a public health nurse, and I wanted to call in because the one gentleman had mentioned Juno stopping their fluoride water fluorination for Juno back quite a few years ago, I think in 2011.
Ten years ago.
10 years ago.
2006.
So 2007, sorry. I think Fairbanks was 2011. Anyway, they just got a hot off the presses consequences of community water fluoridation cessation for Medicaid eligible children and adolescents. It's a paper that just came out in 2017 where they looked at whether or not ceasing fluorination in Juno had an effect on cavities and dental decay. And it did show that there was a marked increase in caries and increased treatment costs for people throughout Juno because of ceasing the fluorination. So I know that I think it was Mr. Cohen had mentioned Juno stopping their water fluorination program and that there wasn't really anything showing that things that changed because of that. But there is this new study that just came out specifically on Juno itself and how it impacted cavities and tooth decay in the community after they ceased doing water fluorination.
Okay, so Erin clearly is the public health nurse here in town. It sounds like you're definitely in support of keeping fluoride in the drinking water.
I am. You know, the safe limit, which it sounds like they work very hard at the water treatment program to maintain, is going to be probably the best way to reduce cavities and help with the cost, because the cost itself of fluorinating in a town of 5,000 is about $3 a person, roughly. The cost of a cavity filling is anywhere from $35 to $40 per person. So that's a huge difference cost-effective-wise, just in financially, to help reduce the amount impact-wise that tooth decay can have in our community. And it's considered one of the top 10 public health innovations that has happened in the United States. And it's really helped a lot of communities reduce that risk of dental caries and tooth decay. So.
All right. Well, thanks for your comments, Erin.
Sure. Thank you.
Yeah. And I wanted to just read, I know, Sandy, you have a comment for sure, and I wanted to just kind of read really quickly this comment that we got through an email from Marlene Cushing. She's a retired public health nurse here in Petersburg, and she says, I am very proud of the work we did years ago to get fluoride into our water. It has benefited hundreds of children and harmed no one. Much higher levels occur naturally in many places, so we can be sure of the long-term effects. Topical fluoride works differently and can't replace the benefit of having it in our drinking water. I hope common sense prevails and we continue to offer the benefits of water fluoridation in our town. Again, that's an email from Marlene Cushing, a retired public health nurse. So, Sandy, you had a comment that we do have a caller on the line, so we're going to try to get to everybody. So if you can keep it brief.
Sure. It's all about dosage. Some of these scientific studies that are reported from the opponents, they're not considering dosage. Going back to a study in the 1930s, that's 100 years ago. Things have changed quite a bit since then. There are a lot of studies being done. There are a lot of studies on the internet. And most people, scientists, refer to that as junk science. They're not peer-reviewed, science-based evidence. The CDC supports safety and effectiveness of water fluoridation, as well as the Public Health Service, the World Health Organization, American Dental Association, American Cancer Society. It doesn't have a basis.
All right. Real quick, Deanna, and then we're going to take the caller.
I'm hearing a list of authoritative bodies. What the previous caller and also Ms. Cushing said regarding the CDC, at the CDC there's about 22,000 or more scientists, but the oral health division is only 25 to 30 people. They're mostly dentists and not researchers. And this little statement that water fluoridation is the most important, one of the most 10 most important things that has happened in the 20th century, just gets repeated over and over. It's a rubber stamp. And I do not find it convincing, because the health studies that were done by the CDC and the NIH and other bodies, the U.S. Public Health Service, they never even finished the initial studies. Science moves on, and it seems like only other countries are doing the brain studies, the bone studies. We seem to only be interested in teeth in our country. Okay. Why is that?
All right, let's take this caller. Hi, good morning.
Hi, am I on?
Yes, you are. Thanks for joining us.
Okay. I'm actually in Juneau, but I grew up in Petersburg, and I had my teeth worked on by Dr. Beardsley and my teeth cleaned by Sandy. And this is honestly a very important issue to me, because I would be very unhappy if fluoride ended up back in the Juneau water supply. To me, it's a matter of a person's individual choice. You know, if somebody wants to let their teeth rot, they can eat junk food, and they can, you know, that's up to them. It sucks, but we live in a country that gives people that freedom. But if somebody wants to buy the fluoride tablets, if somebody wants to use fluoridated toothpaste, they have access to that too, you know? And I'm hearing an awful lot of, well, we have to do this for the public good. We've seen these studies that show this, this, and this, and it's a matter of public health and safety. Well, tooth decay isn't contagious. Tooth decay is a matter of individual responsibility. So that's my point.
Okay, thanks for your call. Dr. Beardsley.
Everybody seems to want to point out that people can treat themselves, you know, do their own fluoridation if they want to do it. There was a study done at NIH in Bethesda with healthcare professionals on giving fluoride tablets to their own kids. Those professionals at NIH weren't much better than the general public in remembering to give their kids the tablets. So you can't beat a community like water supply as for making sure it gets there, because the individually people aren't going to remember. What the fluoridation that people get has to be a continuous cycle. If you have drop off a few months or a year or something like that, then you got a weak spot in that enamel that formed in that time. that will make a difference in tooth decay. Just that alone will. So it's important to keep the fluoridation going in this community.
All right, we have another caller. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Lisa Nielsen.
Lisa?
Hi, yeah, Lisa calling from Juneau, Fort Petersburg. And I absolutely feel the same way as Dawn and Dana, of course. I submitted a letter to the editor also, and I'll be voting yes to remove it from the water supply. And like Dawn, I compliment the water department for using a pharmaceutical grade and not using the toxic industrial that 80% of America uses. But my feeling, and this is at 45 years old, the healthiest I've ever been after moving away from the American Western medicine model. And so I absolutely agree with Western medicine for emergency care, for trauma care, but I think that this one pill, one ill, looking only at our teeth, and as Dawn said, not looking, and Dana, not looking at the cost of other problems and other issues and other health risks that we're exposing ourselves to, is an enormous American mistake. It's completely common right now. The idea that that an authority knows better is really tough for me to swallow, of course. So so hopefully people will consider that the CDC in their fluoridation recommendations listed community water fluoridation as the least effective but the most economically sound way to do it. It's the cheapest. It has nothing to do with dosage. It has nothing to do with, virtually any of the other arguments. Topical is the best way. Putting it in the water supply is the cheapest. And I think that, like many other people, those of us that are asking the tough questions are wondering, why is it so fringe to be asking these tough questions? This is the job that we would hope that the actual people that we're being asked to listen to would be doing these studies and would be checking if there was any chance that it could be hurrying your system around the holistic system. Then these questions are super important to be answered. I don't see that they are being answered.
Right. Okay, thanks, Lisa, for your comments.
Thanks. Take care, guys.
Okay. So she was definitely for taking the fluoride out of the drinking water, and she feels like there are other ways that you could get the fluoride, and you wanted to, Sandy?
These subjects have been studied by the Centers for Disease Control and the American Cancer Society. They do not cause cancer. They do not have these adverse effects that they are claiming. These scientific studies that are being quoted by the opponents are not science-based evidence.
That's
there are facts
wrong.
That are left out. They're omitted.
Please don't do that. Don't interrupt somebody when they're talking.
Okay. Don, did you have a comment that you wanted to add?
Well, my comment was don't interrupt somebody when they're talking.
Okay. Thank you.
That's very impolite.
Okay.
But I do have a comment.
Okay. Let's hear it.
What I would like to point out is that some of the most recent validation to the dangers of fluoridating water comes through the National Research Council of the National Academies review, Fluoride in Drinking Water, a scientific review of the EPA standards. This report was done in March of 2006, so it's relatively current. It's 10 years old. This 12-member panel of the RC committee was asked to provide an independent review of the science based on contaminant level of fluoride in the drinking water. Notice it says it's a contaminant. That was set by in 85, and that part was 4 parts per million. The EPA instructed the reviewing committee to identify only health effects which are known with total certainty. This is contrary to the intent of the Safe Drinking Water Act, which requires the EPA to determine whether any adverse effects can be reasonably anticipated, and even though not proved to exist. The EPA instructed the committee not to determine a new safety level of fluoride in the drinking water. They left it at 4 parts per million. The committee was instructed not to review silofluorides, the industrial waste product actually used in more than 90% of fluoridated water. Thankfully, we're not doing that here in Petersburg. So regardless of the outcome, the public can be assured that we're not using a contaminated product with other side effects that may be. However, okay, despite these restrictions, the committee broke new ground by declaring that severe dental fluorosis is an adverse health effect, not a mere cosmetic effect. The current standard of 4 parts per milligram of fluoride altered does not protect against adverse health effects, and that silicon fluorides need to be tested in adverse health effects. Now, Dr. Robert Carton, PhD, the scientist who wrote the official review and summary of the NRC report for the September 2016 of Fluoride Journal, stated, based on the information uncovered and applying the proper interpretation of the Safe Drinking Water Act, the recommended maximum contaminant level goal for fluoride in drinking water should be zero.
All right. So you brought up fluorosis, and I know I mentioned a long time ago we were going to talk about what that is. But what are we talking about? Those of you working in the dental industry, what is that?
Fluorosis is also called mottling, and it is from excessive amounts of fluoride that could be occurring naturally. Like I said earlier, it takes at least about 5 to 6 parts per million to show physical eyesight, I guess, fluorosis that might appear as little white specks on the teeth or little brown specks. Certainly these teeth are decay resistant. They don't have cavities usually, but it's a cosmetic issue. It's just the coloration in the enamel.
Do you see that happening in Petersburg?
No, I haven't seen it happening in Petersburg. Like I said earlier, I saw it in North Dakota and Montana.
So higher levels, what you see is
higher levels than what Petersburg has. Talking about high doses.
Okay. Yeah. Dr. Beardsley?
In my years of practice here in Petersburg, I'll have to say that I've never seen any fluorosis in anybody that grew up here in Petersburg. If I've seen some, it's somebody that had to move here from an area that had higher levels.
Okay. All right, let's take another caller. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. This is Nicole McMurrin. Hello, everybody out there. I would like to say thank you so much to everyone who's involved in some really great civic and civil discourse on the matter. I can't say how much I appreciate that and how respectful the conversation is going. So thank you. I have two questions. One is in response to a comment that Sandy made earlier. I'm wondering if there is a means for appropriate intake of fluoride during pregnancy. You had mentioned discussion about how important if I understood correctly, fluoride intake was during in vitro to the development of the child. So that's very interesting to me. Also, I'm wondering about, I haven't heard discussion, just sort of longer-term health care or the importance of oral health care beyond the basics of, you know, a basic cavity or things like that, where, you know, if things really go awry in the mouth and we aren't able to afford good dental care, what are ramifications thereof? So just a couple of questions out there. Thanks very much, everyone.
Okay, thanks for the call, Nicole.
Welcome.
On Nicole's first question about a pregnant woman drinking fluoridated water, fluoride doesn't pass through the placenta. So the unborn child is not receiving fluoride at that time until birth.
Okay. And then she had another question about, it seems like she was wondering about health issues beyond if dental decay affects other parts of your health.
Oh, oral health affects everything. Heart disease and our whole body, it's all connected.
Decay, so it's not just rotten teeth, if it gets
bad. Well, rotten teeth can, I've heard of people being in hospital situations because of an abscess tooth. And some of that is dental neglect, too, and not carrying through on things. But it can cause death, an abscess tooth could, if the infection gets into a person's body.
Okay.
I mean, there's all kinds of things.
All right. We have, Dan, if you have something real quick, and then we're going to take a call.
Fluoride absolutely passes through the placenta. Just 3 days ago, there was a report on CNN regarding a study that was done in Mexico talking about prenatal fluoride exposure and cognitive outcomes, meaning IQ. And there is a definite effect even at the low levels of 0.15 to 1.38 milligrams a liter. That's parts per million.
All right, so I can see we definitely have differing opinions on even, you know, studies that are out there and what's actually fact. And so let's take this caller and see if there's a question here. Good morning. You're on the air.
Is this line three?
Well, yes, it is.
Okay. Hi, this is Kathy Reamer calling, and I just have a question. Does fluoride dissipate when you cook water?
No.
Okay. Thanks for that question, and we are going to, it looks like Don Koenig has an answer.
We get fluoride, we take it in our water, and if you're cooking with it, it imparts it into the food. It imparts it into your body. We have many sources of fluoride. Nearly everything that's on the grocery shelves, even the pesticides, which we treat the food that we have to keep it safe and we think is safe, has been the pesticides themselves have fluoride in it. We get fluoride from so many other sources, and that's the problem. We get an overdose of fluoride. There is no dosage, no way of knowing what the dosage is that we're taking into our bodies. Even if we may say we're treating the teeth with the water, but there's all these other sources of fluoride. I did an analysis myself independently. I went down off the sheet in 1998 and took and sent to the lab in Juneau, and everything I took off the shelf, whether it was a box of cereal, it was a can of food or whatever, it all had fluoride in it. So we've got lots of sources of fluoride
coming. Thank you for answering that question, Don. My second question was, I think that there are a lot of people in town who really appreciate having fluoride in their water, just because I know it's very difficult to remember to do the swish or, you know, take the pill. And I'm just wondering if we can't look at this a different way and continue education and stuff. But just if you don't want fluoride in your water, don't drink tap water. Don't use tap water for your cooking. And then everybody who maybe solve the issue between the people who really do want. I truly believe that fluoride helps with your dental health, and it's so important. I've seen kids who come from places where they didn't have fluoride in the water, and they have no teeth when they're in kindergarten. And I just think that as we age, we understand the importance of having good teeth to the health of our whole body. So say I want fluoride in my water, and I would be frustrated if it wasn't, not necessarily me in particular. So why should it be taken out of the water? I really don't care about all that other stuff. I just care that my kids' teeth are strong and healthy. I guess I'm just kind of playing the devil's advocate here and wondering what kind of an answer you would have to that question.
Does anybody want to take that?
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, it is. It's safe and effective. It's been proven by reputable scientists for years. It's been studied in both directions. They're over there chuckling at me, especially Dana. I know we're on completely different sides. I've looked at the reports and different things on the internet, and it's scary. That information they present is scary, but it's simply not true.
Hey, Dana?
I have to say the same about Sandy. Her information is the same information over and over again. And why doesn't Europe fluoridate? There are about four countries that have fluoride in their salt. And a few fluoridate. But the rest, 97%, do not. Their teeth are as good as ours. There are so many other health effects. And all you have to do is look. There's much peer-reviewed science. Sorry.
I think that the caller, Kathy, brought up a good point, and that is there's kind of two main arguments that I'm hearing, and that's one to, you know, keep it in the water, and if you don't want it in the water, then you can use another water source. And then another side is, you know, take it out of the water, and if you want fluoride, then find another way to get it, whether it's gels or a topical or something like that. All your hands are raised.
We do have a
caller. Dr. Beardsley, you want to say something real quick?
Yeah. The comment on water fluoridation and the fact that it really isn't that effective. It whether it crosses the placental barrier. I was in the Bethel service unit. I had one village that had natural. There's only two places in Alaska I know of that have natural fluoride in the water. And one of them was in the Bethel service unit. And the people there, it was in a spring that they could only use during when things weren't frozen. And the baby teeth could get bombed out, but the permanent teeth were fine. They were harder than normal than any other surrounding villages. That's kind of proof that the fluoride, whether it crosses the placental barrier or not, you know, it doesn't.
So it didn't affect the baby teeth?
But baby teeth aren't affected by fluoridation. Okay. But the permanent teeth definitely are from birth up through about age 8 or 10. Beyond that, it's really not doing you a whole heck of a lot of good. It's just that certain age group that the fluoride gets incorporated throughout the whole thickness of the enamel. And that's the strength in preventing tooth decay, is to have it form throughout the whole thickness of the enamel. That's important.
Okay. All right, let's take another call. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello, this is Mike Moyer. I wanted to initially thank Dr. Beardsley for coming out as such a strong proponent for fluoridation. I think this is a tremendously important contribution to our health as a community. I'd like to just give you a little information about a personal deal with me. My grandmother was born in Colorado, in a mining community in Colorado. My great-grandfather was a mining engineer. And when they moved to Valdez, Alaska, my great-grandma was appalled by the level of tooth decay in the children in Valdez. My grandmother, on the other hand, she went on to live into her 90s with never having ever any ill effects whatsoever from this sort of thing, and had every single one of her original teeth, which is phenomenal. And her children, on the other hand, who all grew up in Southeast Alaska and Western Washington, had a terrible cavity problem. So I think that it's vital for our health as a community to remember that either we use a supplement fluoridation or natural fluoridation. If we don't have enough mineralization and natural fluoridation in our water, then we have to add it, and that's so important. Anyways, I thank you for your show today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay, thanks for your call, Mike. And we're going to take a quick break, but we will be back with you in just a minute. Thanks. Thanks for joining us. For those that are just joining us, we are having a call-in show going on now about fluoride in Petersburg's drinking water. That's going to be a question on the ballot in the municipal election on October 3rd, whether or not to keep fluoride in the water supply. It is a call-in show, and we do have a caller on the line. Good morning. You're on the line.
Yeah, this is line one. Am I on?
Yes. Yeah. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. My name's Russ Wallace. I just was doing a quick internet check, and it seems like the internet is saying fluoride does pass through the placenta.
Thank you.
There was some discussion on that?
Yes. Yeah, there is. I mean, and that's a good point that you bring up when you use the internet for information. You can find a lot of different kinds of information out there. I've looked at fluoride myself, and there's quite literally dozens and dozens of studies on both sides. Mm-hmm. So I encourage people to look things up themselves. Dana, you had a comment? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there have been studies out of China for years showing that aborted fetuses, if you open up their brains, you're going to see that there's fluoride in there. And I want to refer back to the previous caller who talked about his grandmother up north and the appalling state of tooth decay. Well, my dentist not my dentist. My neighbor next door is a dentist, and he and I do not agree about fluoride, though he does agree that it ought to be a personal choice whether we're forced to drink it in our water. He spent many years going up north, and he said what you find in the grocery stores in these little villages is appalling. They've got liquid high fructose corn syrup just literally falling off the shelves. I mean, that's what they eat up there. The kids, their teeth rot. They are addicted to sugar. And I think that is probably the number one cause of tooth decay, nothing else. High fructose corn syrup and sugar.
Well, that's interesting. I did live up north for 15 years in Bethel. I didn't notice that specifically. But caller, are you still with us?
So what are we working on today?
Nobody told you.
Okay. I think he has moved on, but did you have a comment, Don?
Yeah, I have a comment. I mentioned the Juneau Fluoride Commission, where it was under commission for 2 years, and in 2006, they, after 2 years of review, and it was kind of divided because there's so much information out there, but they came to the conclusion that the evidence regarding the effectiveness and safety of fluoridation was inconclusive and therefore recommended for continuing fluoridation. Now, I might point
against
fluoridation. Okay, and I might point out that those that were supportive of fluoridation looked online, and it said they spent $150,000 to support their view of fluoridation. Those opposing it spent $7,000. And the vote was 60% of the people said no, even though they've been inundated with, you know, the pro side of fluoridation. So there are people out there that are more discerning today based on what we're doing, whether it's the science or other facts, whoever looks at, you know, this side of the issue or that side of the issue. My main concern is it's not about teeth. It's not only about teeth. Mm-hmm. It's about our general health and our well-being. And we don't, these people that have looked at that, is if you took 2 years to study something and came to the conclusion to make a recommendation of not fluoridating your water, I would stand by that, and you would see that as a result of that, Fairbanks took it, voted it out of their water. Palmer's taken it out of their water. The only community in southeast Alaska that has fluoridation besides Petersburg is Sitka. And it's only a matter of time, and hopefully if this doesn't pass this time around, we'll be back at the table talking about it again until it is finally removed.
Okay.
That's all I feel about
it. We have a caller, and we also have an email. This Lizzie Thompson, who called earlier, she sent us an email, and she said she would like to add that she drank fluoridated water throughout her pregnancy and exclusively breastfed her daughter, and yet her daughter had rotten baby teeth and had to have the top four front teeth extracted. She also has Flourish. She's lived in Sitka and Petersburg, both fluoridated their water supply. So that was her added comment. Did you have a comment, Dr. Beardsley?
Oh, it got me going on.
I had a comment about the Juneau results already. In Juneau, the dentists are saying decay has increased. Dr. Tingey, the orthodontist that comes from Juneau to Petersburg, he's noticing a huge difference in the amount of cavities in Juneau youth compared to Petersburg.
Okay. It's been 7 years since fluoridated, or since Juneau took out the water fluoridation. So they're starting to see six-year molars that are bombed out. After 7 years, the tooth's only been in the mouth 1 year. That's tremendous decay. So obviously didn't pay to take the fluoride out. I think it's going to be just a matter of years before, I would guess, maybe 7 or 8 years again. Juneau's going to realize that they made a bad mistake, and they will refluoridate their water supply.
All right, let's take another call here. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I have just a couple of comments. I don't have, I'm not at the stage where my teeth need the fluoride, but I'm thinking of all the chemicals that are in the water. Why are we picking on fluoride? Chlorine dioxide is a very highly toxic item. It's used in bleach in the pulp mills. If we have a chlorine leak in the cannery, everybody clears out of town, and yet that's part of our water supply. Anything that can kill things in the water can kill us if we take enough of it. So it's a matter of if we take the fluoride out, is chlorine going to be the next? That's all I have to say.
Okay.
It's all about dosage.
Yeah, it's a dosage. And if we've got a safe dosage, a healthy dosage, and it's helping. I had a lot of cavities. I grew up in Seattle before they did anything. Since I got up here, well, I mean, I'm not getting them anymore, and I'm not eating any less sugar.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. I wanted to ask you as a dentist and you as a hygienist, why would dentists support what's the incentive, I guess, to support fluoride in the water? Because there's been some talk about economics or monetary reasons, I guess, nationally for dentists like the ADA or even the government. But specifically, I'm asking you as people in the dental health industry, you know, what is the incentive? Why fight the battle?
It's for their health. We want children to have healthy teeth. And it is economic. It's several things together, but the bottom line is...
Would you make more money, though, if you had a lot of rotten teeth out there?
Of course we would. We want people to have healthy mouths. That is our goal. Yes, decay is down worldwide, as Dana mentioned. That's our goal. And it's due to several reasons. That's what we want.
You, Dr. Beardsley and then Dana.
I've been here in town for quite a number of years. I've seen the difference that the water fluoridation makes as far as cutting down on the number of cavities. What I don't see is all the problems people seem to mention is coming from other areas, other countries, Europe or Mexico or other places like that. I don't see that we have any problem here in town. Be specific. If you think fluoride's causing a problem here in town, name them. What's the problems?
An interesting story on the history of fluoride, too. Grand Rapids, Michigan, we all know, was the test site when fluoridate was first added to the water. It was supposed to be added on January 1st. Well, the newspaper there ran an article on how people were complaining to their physicians and other people how the fluoride was affecting them negatively, causing problems in their health. But the fluoride actually hadn't been added until January 25th. It was emotion. Purely emotion.
I have a comment from a cosmetic dentist who says, I see and provide cosmetic dentistry to repair dental fluorosis. These costs can exceed $100,000 lifetime damages. Dental fluorosis is another way that dentists can make money.
Well, we heard from these dentists or the hygienists that they haven't seen any fluorosis.
I've seen it.
You've seen it?
I've seen it here in town.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not just brown specks. It's also white.
White.
Opaque.
White flakes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's the indication that at some point the child took too much fluoride.
Okay, Dr. Beardsley.
Most brown specks or white spots and things like that that you're going to see here in town are usually caused by high fevers, by an illness. And that's the primary reason for those. Don't look at those and say it's fluorosis. That's a bad mistake.
So there are other reasons that
there's
you have
other
white
reasons
specs
that are much more common.
Specs. Okay. All right. So I have kind of some questions myself just about, you know, going back to those two arguments of taking it out of the water and then using other ways to get fluoride if you choose, or keeping it in the water and finding other water sources or something like that. And I know, just from my little research that I did, and it's very limited, that you can filter out fluoride.
With a reverse osmosis system.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right and there. That, right on the table there.
Okay, and Don, you're doing that at home.
I have to.
Okay.
Dr. Beardsley's telling me, well, you don't have to do that. There's no problems. I have problems.
I have health problems
that doctors are telling me that I have afibrillation. I've had ablations three times, and I know that fluoride and magnesium bond, and it affects my electrical discharge in my heart. And I've been taking fluoride in this community for 31 years, and I object to it because it's not about teeth. It may be teeth may be part of the issue we're trying to address, but there's people with diabetes, there's people with kidney issues, there's all kinds of subset of the population that you're not talking about, Dr. Beardsley, and doctors are not here in this room to talk about it either. Now, they may have their viewpoints, and that can be just as controversial, and that's why people who have looked at the facts have said, let's back off, let's back off the facts. Maybe we need to use alternative methods. It should be the right of the parent and the responsibility of the parent to put whatever they want, the food that they want. The biggest problem with dental decay is what you eat in your food. What kind of food, how many beverages, how much sugar you have. I have traveled the world. I've been in Africa. And I've looked at the black people in Africa with beautiful, beautiful teeth. But they have other health issues. Their life expectancy is 39 to 40 years old. They've got beautiful teeth. Just look at any of the skeletons that you might see. Or look at the people walking the streets. It could be in Africa. It could be in China and other places. So 95% of the world does not fluoridate. 95% is not fluoridating. What you're telling me is dental care is all over the world and problems, but that's what you eat and how you consume it. What about the Eskimos up north before when they didn't have all the different types of food? They lived in the rural village. Look at the skeletal remains. And you see cavities in those teeth? No. You're not going to find that because they didn't have the sugars and the sweets and all the other things that we as a society. And what has our society become? It's moving towards high diabetes because we eat so much. Others, how much obesity we have in the country. It's a health issue. And so this is just one of the many issues that are facing out there. And I'm saying for myself and my family and others, my wife Gloria and I were sitting at the dinner table the other day, long before fluoride was introduced into the water system. But there were people talking about it. Gloria took it upon herself when the kids were just little tiny children, and she started feeding them fluoride. And how it came about was the discussion when her son opens his mouth and he says, "Well, Mom," he says, "I was really disappointed when we all went to the dentist. The girls only had a couple of cavities, and I had 12 taking fluoride daily in their water through a topical application. I'll bet you 99% of the problem was what he ate, how much candy and sugar and pops and other things that he ate.
I thought he was taking
it's
pills.
What you eat.
I thought he was taking fluoride tablets.
Well, he was taking fluoride in the water. He was talking about the milk and putting fluoride in the powdered milk because they didn't have regular milk in those days. They couldn't afford that.
So that filtering system that you have, how much does that run?
It's about $600. And my system produces 100 gallons a day. I can fill, it's very fast recovery. Now, the lady that called in, Kathy Reamer, Reamer, mm-hmm. that called in about fluoride and what's going into the food and what you cook with. We cook with this. We can produce enough water to cook, but what I can't get out of it is when I take a shower. Or I could get the chlorine and the fluoride and other things in the shower that may be absorbed through the skin. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you're not going to avoid fluoride per se. It's in the environment, but it's how it may be affected. I would rather err on the side of do no harm. No harm, none. Nothing, no risks. Let me be responsible for my health. And I have found out that because I had endocarditis in 2005, and I found out that I nearly died. I had pancreatitis. And the doctor says, "What's going on? My whole organs were dying." Well, I just read yesterday that Cipro was an antibiotic that they were trying to kill the bacteria in my heart. That bound with the magnesium. And I became allergic to it, and I was laying on my deathbed. The doctor says, "Well, my son, you're either going to live or die, and we're not going to feed you. You're going to suffer, and it's going to be an agonizing death. No food, no water." 7 days later, with nothing, I recovered. 2 weeks later, I started all over again with another pancreatic attack. And that's because of the Cipro. So they changed the medication. So we are, each of us as human beings are unique. It's really hard to just throw a blanket over everybody and say, it's okay. You can tolerate this, you can tolerate that. I'm grateful that God has blessed me and the doctors who have cared for me. But I've been in the hospitals where I was going to have surgery. And the anesthesiologist came to me because I had to have my gallbladder removed. And I said, "I want to know what's in the gallbladder." The gallbladder was 90% Cipro. And when I went for surgery, the anesthesiologist looked at my arm. And what do you think the doctors had me hooked up to? The nurses had me hooked up to as an antibiotic before I had my gallbladder? Was Cipro. And the anesthesiologist caught it. So mistakes are made, and I think we're making a mistake in our society, and it should be our choice or the parental choice.
You mentioned no harm, having no harm done, but I think some people would argue that that means putting in fluoride into the water if you're not going to harm the dental health of parts
of the community.
Both,
you probably, as you're saying, could look at it both ways. Do no harm. But no doctor, no dentist, as I started earlier in saying, if I were sitting in their dental chair and somebody wanted to put fluoride in my mouth or put mercury in my mouth, would they not ask me permission? You bet they would. Would you not agree to that?
I should, yeah.
Absolutely. As a professional, you would say whatever you're going to give to somebody. Look at what's going on the TV today with all the new drugs that we have out there for this and that and everything else. And then all the disclaimers that come forth. And then all the lawsuits that come forward after that because of people, the harm that's caused. It's a crazy society. I just say back up, and let us make our own choices.
All right, I'm going to remind people, we have taken this show over, 11 o'clock. It was going to be an hour long, but the conversation kind of continued past that point. So if you have a call or you want to make a comment, now's the time. We probably will take this another 10 minutes or so until 11:30. You can call us at 772-3808 if you'd like to join in the conversation. Sandy, did you have something?
I remember Don talking about the reverse osmosis back in 98 when it went to a vote. And when did you install it in your home?
I did it right then in 1998.
So you lived with fluoridated water roughly 10 years, yet you're blaming most of your health causes on that. Like you said, don't interrupt. And it's documented. Fluoride does not cause these health concerns. It depends on which scientific reports you look at. The experts in the field have ran these science studies, and it's safe in the low dosage that's added in community water fluoridation. And the comment about 95% of the world doesn't have fluoride, it's naturally in the water in several areas.
I know 75% of America does fluoridate their water. Let's take a caller. Good morning, you're on the air.
Hi, I just have a quick comment. I would like to hear someone talk about the way that fluoride interacts or interferes with iodine. And also, I just like to know whether you wonder, are people too stupid to take care of their own dental health, or do you just feel like it's your responsibility? Thank you.
Okay.
I can
thanks for your
that.
Call. Okay, Deanna.
Okay. In areas of the world where iodine is low, fluoride tends to do a lot more damage. But apparently fluoride's interactions with iodine are complicated. It is now thought that in some goiter belts where people develop a goiter that is thought to be because of not enough iodine, it could be because of too much fluoride.
Okay, and the caller mentioned something else, which is, are people too stupid to use, or basically, if I think she was getting at, if fluoride isn't in the water, there are other ways to get fluoride. But then we had talked about earlier that doesn't always.
Unfortunately, some people do neglect their teeth. That has nothing to do with fluoride or not. If they had fluoride, though, they'd have a better opportunity at having healthy teeth. Even with neglect, things are different.
I have to say that in low-income communities where there is not enough good nutrition going on, those children are very vulnerable to the bad effects of fluoride because fluorine is very reactive. It is a molecule that goes looking to bind onto other elements. It's a really interesting element. It's got only 7 electrons in its valence shell, and so it's really hungry, and it binds to everything, and especially to calcium and magnesium and other minerals. And the problem is when it gets in your body, it has to break other bonds, other things that are going on, like what's in your collagen and in your soft tissues. And so your bones sequester it to keep it from doing so much harm. And you pee out about 50% of it, but you hold on to the rest of it, and it builds up in your bodies. And that's why over many years or over high doses, then you're going to see these ill effects like arthritis. That isn't really arthritis, it's fluorosis poisoning, skeletal fluorosis, and cancer, osteosarcoma. We had a case in our own town last year. a rare bone cancer.
Okay, Don, and then I wanted to ask, actually bring Carl back into the conversation because he's been sitting here quietly in the corner. Don, did you
have like to respond to Ms. Volk's comment about the fluoridation when I started. I did put the fluoridation osmosis in my home and at the 901 house in 1998, right after the talking with Dr. Kennedy about the problems associated with fluoride. And I operated it for about 5 years. And then I chose, through maybe my own volition, to discontinue that. And so I have not lived without fluoridated water probably since 2001 and 2002. I've been drinking fluoridated water from that point on until this year in January of 1917, I contacted, I was talking about my heart and the issues I was having after open heart surgery in 2014, and I was having trouble healing. I had a whole lot of issues with, you know, atrial fibrillation, all the other problems. And so I went back and I started looking and reading some more and found out that the magnesium binds with fluoride and I needed to get it out of my system and stop it. So I installed that system. That current number I gave you was $600 for a unit, was installed in probably February of this year. So I've been living without fluoridated water since that time. So okay. I just want to correct the record and not ever misconceive that I've been living without fluoride and why that concern did come up, because I continue to follow my own health like you would do with about your teeth and your family and other things. So,
all right, Carl, you're the Public Works Director here in Petersburg. And if I understand things correctly, the borough will follow the vote. So whatever happens, whatever the outcome of the October 3rd vote is, whether people choose to keep fluoride in the water or whether voters choose to take it out of the water, that's what the borough is going to do?
That's my understanding, yes. As long as we're tasked with adding fluoride to the water system, we will do it as best that we can. And my operators are very interested in doing that in a responsible manner and as safely as possible. And so we'll continue to do that. But if the vote does come out in opposition to fluoride, we'll, of course, abide by that vote.
Okay. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
You know, one thing just to talk about the toxicity of and go back to what Sandy said. It's all about dosage. There was a comment about chlorine in the water. And chlorine is a very dangerous chemical, but it's absolutely required to kill microorganisms and other bacteria that can exist in water and that can do people harm. So chlorine is a good example of something in a high dose that would absolutely do you harm and result in death, but at the right dosage is very beneficial to us as humans because it does kill those microorganisms that can make us ill. And I personally see fluoride much the same way. The dosage that is recommended by the EPA and AWWA is effective in improving oral health, and the higher dosages that are allowed, up to 4 parts per million, I would not be supportive of. The water system is never found to be that high, so I just wanted to make it clear that our operators do an excellent job of maintaining that residual where it needs to be, and I believe that it does help with oral health in Petersburg.
Okay, thanks, Carl. All right, so we're pretty much at closing comments. We only have a few minutes left, so I'm going to ask you all to kind of, unless we have a caller, let's see. Okay, so we do have a caller, and these are going to be the last ones that we take. So real quick, good morning.
Good morning. This is Gloria Omer, and I have a concern that I thought I should voice.
Okay, thanks.
My concern is that we're all different sizes. We all drink different amounts of liquid, and in this case, water. How can we say that some are getting too much, and maybe somebody is getting too little. And of course, in this case, probably too much would be their biggest concern, because a baby drinks most of its liquid, or the food comes in a liquid form, and so they would be getting a lot for their size, whereas an adult, whatever our size is, we aren't all the same. So I would think that the amount of water we ingested would make a big difference. So maybe it's a concern I shouldn't have, but I can't help but think that. So I thank you.
Okay, thanks, Gloria, for the call.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And I believe we have one last caller. This will be the last call, so good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm actually calling from Juneau, but I am a former Peterborough resident. Actually, I'm Dana's daughter, Emily Gable. I would like to specifically address a comment that Sandy made earlier, that there are no peer-reviewed scientific studies proving that fluoride plays a role in the development of diseases such as cancer, and that the only people suggesting that fluoride is harmful are purveyors of junk science. So as we speak, I'm looking right now at a listing of peer-reviewed scientific articles on PubMed about fluoride. PubMed is, in case you don't know, the U.S. National Library of Medicine and National Institutes of Health online database of peer-reviewed scientific articles. Anybody can go there, and many of these scientific articles are available to read in their entirety. So the search terms I entered are fluoride and neurotoxicity, and I see that there are 146 results. Now, obviously, entering search terms simply shows correlation. It doesn't show causation. It doesn't prove anything. However, if you actually delve into these articles, and I have, and I suggest that all Petersburg voters do, you will find that they not only suggest, but they actually uniformly assume the harmfulness of fluoride, not merely in high doses, but cumulatively over a long period of time, even at approved doses. So one article entitled "The Influence of Fluorine and the Disturbances of Homeostasis in the Central Nervous System," for example, states, "The analysis carried out with the usage of experimental animal models more than once confirmed that the accumulation of fluoride in the central nervous system initiates inflammatory and degenerative processes throughout the activation of oxidative stress in both young and adult specimens." I think we all know that oxidative stress is one player in the development of cancer. That's why we're always been encouraged to take, you know, antioxidants that will tone down free radicals throughout the body. And this should also be a special interest to Dr. Beardsley and Sandy. But that same article states that fluorine exposure in the prenatal and neonatal periods is dangerous because this element has the ability to penetrate through the placenta and is able to cross the blood-brain barrier. Young individuals are less resistant to the toxic influence of fluorine due to the fact that their defensive mechanisms are not fully developed and the permeability of their blood-brain barrier is higher than among adults. So a lot of other articles pinpoint the much-studied and well-known ability of fluorine to lower IQ. Others talk about the ability of fluorine to impact neurotransmitter production. Others talk about its detrimental impact on the nervous system and the role fluoride can play in nerve degeneration. So as Don has been saying, this is so much more than a teeth issue. It's a whole body issue. And again, anybody can delve into these articles in PubMed. It's published. It's peer-reviewed research. It's not junk science. Sandy is simply incorrect when she states that there's no research supporting the position that fluoride is harmful.
Okay. Thanks for that call. All right. And that was our last call of the show. And now we're going to have some closing comments, because we've been talking about it for an hour and a half, if you can believe that. It's been an hour and a half we're talking about fluoride. So, Don, would you like to go?
Well, I have a question for Carl, and he brought up the subject of chlorine in the water, how toxic it is. Are there other alternative methods to treating our water, maybe more expensive, like treating with ozone to provide us with potable water without the risk of the chlorine? Whether we're talking about fluoride, but you can take a shower in chlorine and fluoride and all that other stuff that can get either absorbed into your body or you breathe the vapors in. Is there not some other alternative method even to treat our water to make it purer?
There are other methods. They are more expensive. Chlorine is a very cost-effective way to achieve the disinfection required to distribute water safely to a community.
Following question then, could you be willing to provide the cost if we changed our water treatment program to an ozone system, remove the fluoride, remove all the other toxic stuff that we put in the water, and give us potable water? What would that cost? Can you provide that to the community at some point in time?
Sure. Yes, absolutely.
I think it would be very helpful, because we're just talking about ourselves, that we live in this small community, 3,000 people, and we care about one another. We really care about one another. I mean, I care about everyone that's in this room and their well-being.
All right, Dana, do you have a closing comment?
I do. there's a perception that the CDC, there's an idea that fluoride has to be drunk. But in 1996, the CDC conceded that the primary benefit of fluoride is topical, and yet the policy lives on. It's like a dinosaur. It just goes on and on, like some government programs do. It should have died then, but it didn't. So that's what I want to say.
Okay, and Dr. Beardsley, do you have any closing comments?
I would like to appeal to the people here in town that are Carl's age or older, and to just basically take a look in their own mouths, think, see how many cavities or fillings they have had, you know, in their lifetime, then look at their kids and base their vote on that. Because I think you'll find that the kids are going to be in much better shape than the people that were, before the treatment. So.
All right. Thanks for that. And finally, Sandy.
I believe in the Centers for Disease Control. They review and scrutinize scientific evidence that comes along, and they still support community water fluoridation as one of the 10 best public health measures, along with seatbelt safety in cars. We all believe in that. Cessation of smoking for health. We all believe in that. The World Health Organization, all of these scientific bodies support community water fluoridation, and I do too. I want all the children to have healthy teeth.
All right. Well, thank you, all of you, for joining us today and informing the public. I'd like to let people know that we recorded this show, and we will be rebroadcasting it. So if you didn't catch all of it, you can listen to the information again at another time. We will also be posting this audio recording on our website, kfsk.org, so you can go there, visit, and listen to it at your leisure, at home, at night, whenever you have the time. And then I'd also encourage people to go online and do your own research. What we heard today was there's a lot of information out there on both sides, and that's one of the ways you can inform yourself before the October 3rd election. Thanks so much.